Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. State utility regulators in March voted unanimously to approve profit guarantees for power plants owned by American Electric Power and First Energy. The utilities said the guaranteed profits would ensure an adequate energy supply and eventually save consumers money. Opponents have called it a bailout, bad public policy that would unfairly burden ratepayers, and a blow to fair markets and competition. Now, federal regulators have put the kibosh on the deal, saying that because it relies in part on a previous federal waiver, the plan requires their approval. That could take years. Joining us now is the Associate State Director for Government Affairs at AARP, Trey Addison. Welcome to the show, Trey.
Thank you. Welcome.
We'll get to what in the world does the AARP care about this for in just a minute. But also with us, business and energy reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Dan Guarino. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Good to be here, Ann.
The Public Utilities Commission of Ohio worked on this plan with AEP and First Energy for about a year and a half. Was there any warning that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission would squash it like this?
There was a lot of warning. There was, at the very least, it was a point of discussion the whole way through. And people who supported these plans, the companies that supported these plans, would say that's a non-issue, that... they would cite precedent. They would cite and they would say, just don't worry about this. I think the manner in which it happening this quickly and just so decisively was a little surprising, because we've lived the last year and a half in this, you know, kind of in this world where we were told this was a non-issue.
And except for First Energy and AEP, all we could find were opponents to the plan. Of course, there was also the unanimous approval by the PUCO. What's behind that? Or is it typical for the PUCO to do make their rulings unanimously?
The overwhelming majority of votes that they take are unanimous. So don't read too much into that.
Okay.
As far as kind of why they supported it and why there are so many opponents, again, that's not that unusual. You'll see major rate proposals where the utilities support them, where there are a couple other parties that will sign on, usually in exchange for special discounts or other benefits. And then you'll see this kind of broad alliance of various other entities against it. So in that way, this was more acrimonious than usual. But in terms of the kind of breakdown of who is in favor and who is against, it's kind of the usual suspects.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the news in the electric utility industry in Ohio. Federal regulators have struck down a plan and approved by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio for AEP and First Energy, Akron-based First Energy, to get guaranteed profits on certain power plants for 8 years. Right now, everything's in limbo. My guest, I'm talking with Dan Guarino of the Columbus Dispatch, and also with me, Trey Addison, Associate State Director for Government Affairs at AARP. The deals are called affiliate power purchase agreements. That's the last time I'll use that phrase. But what would they have done in the simplest terms? Let's put it in terms of the average homeowner.
Well, let's say the price of electricity on the market is $3. I don't know. Just throw it a number. The price of electricity or the price of anything. What this is saying is that as that price goes up and down, you're going to pay the actual costs. So let's say the electricity costs $2.50. You are guaranteed to pay that price, whether it's higher than what's normal in the market, whether it's lower than what's normal in the market. It's kind of like locking in a price plus a profit. And what that means basically is that right now, when electricity prices are really low, you're going to be paying more. And presumably, at some point, the companies say, electricity prices are going to get higher, and at that point, you're going to get a credit. So you're kind of locking in for 8 years.
And it doesn't just lock in direct customers of AEP and First Energy, anyone in the utilities area, service area, right?
Yes.
So, why is that?
Well, and this all has to do with deregulation. So since 1999, Ohio's been moving toward this system of deregulation. And what that means is that everybody in AEP territory and First Energy territory gets their electricity delivered by those companies. They provide delivery service. But they also have a choice of who provides the actual electricity, who owns the power plants. And some of the companies that do that are AEP and First Energy, affiliated companies. But then there's a whole bunch of other providers. You can think Exelon, Dynegy. There's a variety of other companies. So there's this separation between the delivery part of your bill and the electricity generation part of your bill, which to the average consumer is near incomprehensible. But that's kind of the system that we live in.
And so it would affect everybody because of that.
Yes. What's happening with these proposals, these proposals that have been accepted at the state level and now been rejected at the federal level, is it is that delivery company, AEP delivery company, First Energy delivery company, making an agreement with their power plant affiliate. So AEP saying, our power plant affiliate, we're making a deal to buy electricity from our power plants, from these selected power plants at a specific price. So you've got a heavily regulated entity, the delivery company, that is going into an unregulated or regulated in a different way entity, the power plant company, and you're kind of saying, "We're gonna make a deal. We're not gonna put it out to bid. We're not gonna, it's just you're the only candidate for this contract for 8 years."
Now, Trey Addison, why is the AARP? Why does the AARP care?
You know, for us, initially, we did not. We didn't think the deal was going to go through. We heard about it. Obviously, we advocate for 50-plus consumers. And we looked at the deal and said, this is not going to pass the sniff test, just for the very reason that was just mentioned. Ultimately, you can't take an unregulated entity and then pass through funds to another entity back from the – I mean, it was just too complicated. We said the PUCO will never approve this. So once we heard the deal start to get traction, it was sort of a coalition that wasn't a formal coalition. AARP, the Ohio Consumers Council, Ohio Manufacturers Association. You had a number of – there was another group, the Alliance for Energy Choice, who did a number of great ads that really dumbed the topic down to the extent where – I think my favorite one was about the coffee pot, where you had some individuals at a coffee shop, and they said, hey, you know, why is my coffee now $10 as opposed to when it used to be $2? And it was funny, and the woman said, well, we need this additional funds to cover the coffee maker. And the consumer looked at the woman and said, why am I now paying for this? That was how we looked at the deal, and that's how our members looked at it. Frankly, for AARP, anything that is affecting members of the 50-plus community, we're definitely going to weigh in on it. And when we looked at the deal, we looked at, they said, it's going to be $7 a month additional. Then some folks said it would be $10. That's a significant amount of money for someone on a fixed income. I mean, it's the equivalent of someone getting a sandwich, someone paying another bill in a difficult economy. If you look at First Energy territory, for example, we're talking about Akron, Youngstown, some of these communities where, frankly, it's rough. And so we really wanted to weigh in and fight for consumers that are in that boat.
So everything right down to the small consumers on fixed incomes up to the Ohio Manufacturing Association, Manufacturers Association opposed this. Obviously, the OMA, because they're huge consumers, and they would have paid more as well.
Yes, that's correct. And we it's amazing. This is the first time we've ever partnered with the Ohio Manufacturers Association. But it was a great experience. And to be honest with you, what it did is it gave us the ability to partner with non-traditional groups and really discuss how this is going to affect Bob and Betty Buckeye in Putnam County, Ohio, to how it's going to affect the small or the mid-sized manufacturer. And we've seen it as an issue that would affect both of them. And we needed to fight for everyone that would be affected by the deal.
Email from Marie. She says, after this ruling, I heard a rumor that AEP may move out of Ohio in a few years. Do your guests think this is likely? If so, that would have a huge impact on Columbus. Of course it would. AEP is based in Columbus. First Energy is based in Akron. Likewise, it would have a huge impact on them. What has been the impact on these energy companies since this federal ruling?
They're kind of just trying to figure out what to do next. And it was something that they were I don't know if ready for is the right description. They knew that this was a possibility, but in their responses, it's clear that there's a lot of scrambling going on. So they're trying to figure out what to do next, both at the federal level and at the state level. And it's difficult. This was a process that they were, if not directing, I mean, they had a fair amount of control over, and they don't seem to as much anymore.
I guess I wonder whoever gave them the information that the federal regulators wouldn't get involved. Are they going to be fired or something? I mean, this is really the crux of the issue. You spend a year and a half. Those are expensive expensive process to go through. Where'd the bad information come from?
Well, I don't know. There was a lot of bad information to go around, too. I mean, you would have – so you had both AEP and FirstEnergy going forward with the idea that these federal challenges were virtually a non-issue. And you also had the Public Utilities Commission going forward with the idea that the federal challenges were a virtual non-issue. So I suspect that those questions are being asked right now, and I'd be curious what the answers are.
Yeah. If we're going to be a fly on the wall, we, of course, reached out to both AEP and FirstEnergy to be on the show. They declined to participate. We also reached out to the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, but they declined because the cases remain pending before the commission, and we're going to talk about that. Before I let you go, Trey Edison, I understand that AARP members were activated on this issue and sent in tens of thousands of emails and letters and that sort of thing.
Yes, along with the Alliance for Energy Choice, both groups, we partnered together, and it was over 100,000 responses from individuals from throughout the state, which was significant. And that's why we're weighing in not only on this issue, but the upcoming. There's a pending case with DP&L where they want the same thing.
Dayton Power and Light.
Yes.
Yeah.
And frankly, when we hear the consumer, not just, you know, obviously manufacturers have a little different teeth in the game because it affects the bottom line. But for the consumer, when we get that kind of response, we're going to do everything in AARP's power to prevent these kind of things from happening. And it's not as if, for example, with AEP, they recorded record profit and then they go after power purchase agreements. To the consumer, that's a smack in the face. And when we mentioned that just in email, and in one day, we had over 2,500 responses from individuals talking about their story and what that $10 will really mean for them. And we still have those responses. We sent them to the PUCO. We haven't gotten a response back, but it was some amazing stories of just individuals that are going through day to day that will be affected by these decisions. And we're happy with the FERC decision, obviously, to reverse them.
AEP is obviously more financially set than FirstEnergy. AEP's share prices went down about 1% after this announcement from the feds. FirstEnergy's went down almost 10%. That's big. So how do they, I mean, how much does an agreement like this affect not just their bottom line as far as operating the plants, but the markets and how they respond to this kind of thing?
Well, going forward, you're seeing AEP basically say, we're going to essentially abandon this plan or abandon most of this plan, and we're going to move forward. It wasn't that they didn't need it at all, but they didn't need it nearly as much. What you're seeing and what you will continue to see from FirstEnergy is some attempt to kind of put it back together and get some of that money because they need it. They are, for a variety of financial metrics, they're in rough shape, and they need to do something, and they need to do something soon.
We're going to talk about what they've done back in the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, what they're proposing. We're going to talk about how the Ohio General Assembly might get involved or not. Trey Edison, I want to thank you for joining us today to talk about it. I appreciate your input.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the cost of electric energy in Ohio. In March, state regulators approved a plan that would guarantee profits for power plants owned by American Electric Power, based in Columbus, of course, and Akron-based First Energy. Now, federal regulators have squashed the plan, saying that the agreement can't go forward without their say-so. That could take years. Still with us is business and energy reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Dan Guarino. Thanks again, Dan, for joining us. And joining us now is Professor of Public Affairs and City and Regional Planning at the John Glenn College of Public Affairs at Ohio State University, Ned Hill. Welcome to the show.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Nice to be here.
I wanted to ask, why are federal regulators even involved? And it goes back to this issue, Ned Hill, that the whole agreement process was predicated on a waiver that they had issued some years ago. What's going on there?
Well, this is an incredibly complicated set of markets. So let's first start by thinking about the whole electricity market isn't one. There are three levels to it. There's generating, and that's where they make all the electrons.
That's the grid thing.
No. That's
okay.
Before the grid.
Okay, before
those
the grid.
Those are the tea kettles.
Okay.
then there is the grid. That's transmission. So that's where they take the electrons from the plants and distribute it to across big regions. And then there's distribution to individual houses and companies. The transmission and distribution is still fully regulated in the state of Ohio by the PUCO. Now, the federal government, Congress, put together these large transmission organizations, which are multi-state. So we're part of an organization called PJM, Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland, or Peanut Butter, Jam, and Mayonnaise.
Okay.
That covers about 13 states in the District of Columbia. And across that entire grid, there is a free market for the generation of electricity, all the tea kettles. And what this argument we have at the state is the fact that the tea kettles that are in Ohio, owned by First Energy and by AEP, are coal-fired, they're old, they aren't terribly efficient, and they either are or will be losing money as of May 31st. So the way that the other thing that's going on is that we sit underneath this huge reservoir of natural gas, so that generating electrons, tea kettles, by natural gas now is cheaper than coal and is likely to be cheaper for a very long time period because there's so much natural gas here. And the First Energy in particular bet on coal before we really understood how big all the natural gas resources
were.
This is the fracking
boom. Fracking thing, right.
Right. We're all having a fracking good time here.
Yes.
And so they bet on coal. So First Energy has been taking their power plants in West Virginia and pushing them under re-regulation, upping rates to cover their losses there. And the purchase power agreements was a way of subsidizing their losses here. So what?
Because they can't just up their rates in Ohio.
They can't because there's a free market.
Right.
There's a free market going on, so people can go and buy their electrons.
Right, because of deregulation.
Yeah. The federal government, under an organization called FERC, the Federal
Energy Regulatory Commission,
they're the ones that regulate now all of the generation across that entire 13 state footprint. If you are in a state that deregulated that activity,
okay,
which we did. So the FERC has jurisdiction over our tea kettles. And this was an attempt to get around that regulation. The FERC said, no, generation is a federal issue. And they were afraid that by having subsidized generation, they would distort the entire generating market across the entire 13 state footprint, which would set off a dynamic where if our plants aren't rationed out of the market because they are not competitive, someone else's plants will that were competitive, but they get rationed out. So if that plant's in Pennsylvania or West Virginia, they'll go running to their legislature and say, we need protection. So all of a sudden, this 13-state market that gave us improved reliability, gave us cheaper energy costs, would then be balkanized and broken up to a bunch of small markets, and everybody's electric prices would go up. The reliability of the grid over 13 states would go down, and the incentive to invest in new energy-efficient production would go away. And so this really is a huge battle about investment.
But this plan did include green energy factors, right, Dan Guarino?
So the AEP plan contained a gigantic commitment to invest in wind energy and in solar energy. It would be much more than that company or any company has ever invested in Ohio. The first energy plan contained, I would say, a largely unenforceable commitment to invest some in green energy. So of the two, the AEP commitment I think has a lot more teeth in it.
There was AEP committed to 900 megawatts, first energy to 100, but there was a trick. The catch is that they are also covered by purchase power agreements with a 10.38% rate of return. So their commitment to green energy only lasts as long as that energy gets dumped into the national grid the same way in which the coal plants would. So now that the FERC has blown up the PPAs for the coal plants, all bets are off when it comes to the green energy.
Now, I mentioned earlier, this is back before the PUCO. What's going on, Dan? They've just filed something. I know that it's complicated, but it's not over yet with the PUCO.
So we're going through what they call the rehearing process. So basically every party in the case, or close to every party, is going to say, this is the ways we think you got the decision wrong. And this is an opportunity for AEP and First Energy to ask for changes to the decision.
Even though it's already been nixed by FERC.
Yes. Okay. And in light of that, okay. So these applications for rehearing in part are saying, now that we know what this decision was at the federal level, this is how we want to change it at the state level.
Okay.
And so AEP and First Energy have come forward with very different approaches. Their initial plans had a lot of similarities. Their approaches going forward are very different. AEP is scaling back its plans dramatically. First Energy is trying to get some version of its plan, basically trying to get some of the financial benefits of what it had asked for before while circumventing federal regulation. And it will be interesting to see where both of those go.
So this could take another several months.
Well,
Ned Hill?
Well, in First Energy's filing of yesterday, they're demanding a conclusion by June 1. And they're also demanding a response to their filing of yesterday by all the other interested parties.
Including the feds?
Well, not including the feds, but AARP, Ohio Manufacturing Energy Group, and everything, in 5 days, which is absurd.
After
their filing.
Whatever PUCO said.
No. They had a filing date yesterday. They're demanding that all the responses be in by 5 days, and they're demanding a June 1st decision on their rate plan.
Can they do that?
They can ask for anything they want.
Yeah. You can ask for anything.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, this has been going on for a while.
Right.
This has been a more than a year and a half, and the underlying concept has been around for a longer than
since
that.
Since 2013,
yes,
right.
Yes, since 2013. So, and throughout this, there have been lots of times where one group or another has said, we want this done by a certain date.
Okay.
And if there's one thing that's constant, it's that the bureaucratic process takes a long time.
Right.
I would be absolutely stunned if after all of this time, this was the moment at which the Utilities Commission all of a sudden started working quickly.
This has been a long process already. It's been out there in the ether since 2013. Mm-hmm. They've been working on it for a year and a half, and now the head of the PUCO resigns. What's going on with that? Is that Andre Porter?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Andre Porter. So he'll be stepping down May 20th, which means that he probably won't. So he's announced his resignation. He'll be stepping down May 20th. So he probably will not be around. Or he almost certainly will not be around for the vote on the rehearing for these cases. So you're going to have a four-person commission, likely, unless they—
Without a leader.
They would have an interim leader,
okay.
I would think, or they would. He hasn't officially said where he's going yet. Presumably this is the kind of job that you don't just apply for in a week. So this has been in the works for a while. And this case has been in the works for a while too.
Right.
So I don't think you can necessarily look at events of the last couple of weeks and his departure and say, oh, there's some sort of cause and effect, because both of those things have been kind of in process for a while now.
But he has only been in the job for less than 2 years, right?
He's about a year.
About a year, right.
And his predecessor was only there for about a year.
It's a sign that this is not a fun position to have right now.
Right. I mean, the guy, the one before his predecessor had been there for
about 3 years.
Yeah. And then before that, longer.
It was about a dozen years.
Yeah.
So the chair before Porter was a placeholder.
Okay.
Tom is still.
Oh, that's right.
Still a commissioner.
Tom Johnson.
Tom Johnson is still a commissioner. But you all, and at the same time, you have the head of the PUCO staff on paternity leave.
Okay.
So you kind of wonder there's whose hand is on the rudder.
Uh-huh.
The governor's going to have to get involved with the appointment. And at the same time, the rumors coming out of the state house are quite interesting. Attempts to try to re-regulate the generating side of the industry, which if they could do it during a lame duck, I expect, so essentially if they could do it if they could try to do it before the new legislature shows up in January, I think we can expect pitchforks and flaming torches around the statehouse.
By the way, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about electric utilities in Ohio, a big plan to fix the rates for the next 8 years to help pay for their out-of-date and expensive coal-fired power plants. It's fallen through. It's been nixed by federal regulators. Now they're going back to the PUCO to rejigger something, and maybe going to the Ohio General Assembly to reconsider deregulation. It was a big deal back in 1998, 1999.
Fully supported by the utilities are now opposing it.
Right, exactly. Fully supported.
and in fact, we have to keep in mind that when we started down the road to deregulation in 2000, the utilities got a series of payments for stranded assets.
These power plants.
Which were these power plants. And there were a series of payments from 2000 up until this past year to deal with the competitive issues they're having with the costless plants. So that means we paid a second time. And the proposal that the feds nixed was a third subsidy for the exact same plants.
Now, the talk about kind of what happened back in 1999 is a little bit more complicated than that. As far as the multi-billion dollar payments for stranded assets, First Energy got a lot of payments for stranded assets.
They got the bulk of it.
AEP got very little. And AEP has been skeptical of deregulation from the get-go. They've wanted to be a traditionally regulated company. It's First Energy that has wanted to be regulated, then wanted to be deregulated, then wanted to be regulated. Then they've kind of gone back and forth. But if you go through a succession of leaders at AEP, they would almost all say, if not all say, we never should have done deregulation. It was a mistake at the time.
Dan's right. Absolutely correct on that.
What has been the big push back? Can we go back in time then and ask why the big deal for deregulation back in 1998, 99?
The dynamic at that time was you had a couple things going on. There was this push for just deregulation.
A philosophical push.
And this was coming from companies like Enron. In Ohio, there was this strange dynamic where First Energy had these nuclear plants that cost a lot to operate. First Energy rates were sky high, among the highest in the country. AEP rates, they didn't have those expensive nuclear plants. They had these cheap coal plants, were super, super cheap, some of the cheapest in the country. So you had this strange business climate where if you lived on this one block where you happened to be served by AEP, you had dirt cheap prices. And if you crossed the street, you had super high prices. And this was a problem. And what deregulation was trying to do was make it so that those First Energy plants would have to compete so that they could no longer charge those sky high prices. And the thought at the time was that the AEP plants are so inexpensive to operate that they're going to be very competitive. A lot of things have changed since then. We've now see kind of everyone jumbled in the middle in terms of costs, depending on where you live in Ohio. And that was kind of the design.
Jumbled in the middle as far as cost is one of the issues is, of course, new regulations on emissions, increasingly tough regulations.
Well, and let's take a step back. This jumbled in the middle is a sign that markets are working, because again, it's the market for at the base level for generation meant that everyone would end up paying, with the exception of something called capacity charges, the same market rate for the energy as it's generated at the plant level. There'd be one market price. So those plants that had uncompetitively high prices would be rationed out of the market. Those that had low prices would dominate the market. When this was done in 2000, coal was by far the cheapest fuel. Since that point in time, and also there was a massive spike in natural gas prices in the early part of 2003 or 4, Dan, I forgot the exact year.
There have been a couple spikes, but there was one then, and then there was the 08 spike.
The 08 spike was the big one. And so that's when FirstEnergy bet everything on coal. And so in 2008, they said, we have the winning investment strategy, and this is going to get us out of our financial trouble.
It's like somebody, because gas prices are cheap, goes out and buys another SUV thinking this is going to go on forever.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no guarantee that the price of gas won't go up to $3.50 by next week.
Well, there is kind of a small guarantee. It's called Saudi Arabia.
But
in this particular market then, just as that peak hit in 2008, that's when the returns on natural gas started showing up from the Marcellus in Pennsylvania and the Utica here in Ohio. So now that's a structural change. There's so much gas sitting here that you cannot take the straight line of gas prices in 2008 and stretch them out in the future, which in the filings that were made by FirstEnergy, they stopped using gas prices as of 2013, and AEP stopped using gas prices in their filing as of 2014. And they didn't use any of the future contract prices that are already in for this entire eight-year period. Mm-hmm. We had the data. Mm-hmm. But it didn't figure into their rate case.
Well, and that's partly a consequence of the strange way in which these cases are heard in Ohio. So a case takes years to hear, and you don't want to be updating the numbers every 6 months. In this case, it's very convenient not to update the numbers, but you have the information in the application. And then 2.5 years later, those numbers have certainly changed. But you don't want to be updating the numbers over and over again. Ideally, these cases wouldn't take so long to hear, so you wouldn't have this problem of the underlying dynamics changing underneath your feet, which is what has happened in these cases.
But if you're looking for a rate case that goes 8 years out, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. So you want to make certain you get the data right, and the data were just wrong.
We will continue our conversation about rate hikes sought by AEP and FirstEnergy through the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, which approved them unanimously. The federal regulators, on the other hand, have put the kibosh on the whole deal, and everything's sort of in limbo right now. If you have a question or comment, I certainly have questions, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about profit guarantee plans for American Electric Power and Akron-based FirstEnergy. The Public Utilities Commission of Ohio in late March unanimously voted to approve the plans, but federal regulators last week said the agreement can't proceed without their say-so. That could take a long time. The utilities don't have that much time, especially FirstEnergy. Now they're turning to the Ohio General Assembly to undo the electricity deregulation passed in 1999. Still with us in the studio is the business and energy reporter for Columbus Dispatch, Dan Guarino, and OSU professor of public affairs and city and regional planning at the John Glenn College of Public Affairs, Ned Hill. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Dan Guarino, you made the point earlier that First Energy is a lot more eager to get something through along these lines ASAP. American Electric Power, less so. They don't have the same financial issues that First Energy has. Which of them have directed their attention to the Ohio General Assembly to readdress the whole deregulation issue in the first place?
AEP has talked about it more publicly. In the past few days.
Okay.
But they are both – this is something they both would be eager to see pursued.
Now, this is a big deal. You mentioned earlier, I think, that if they did it during the lame duck session, blah, 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 blah. I mean, they want to be out of here by June 1st. Mm-hmm. We already know that. And it's a huge election year. They're not coming back until a lame duck probably next November, meaning that it's after the election. What are the odds they'll get anything done?
It would be very
– If they even decide to do anything.
Exactly. It would be very, very difficult to – because the underlying issues are so complex. So you have to help people understand what it is that you're asking them to do. And then you have to overcome some ideological opposition. There's the House and the Senate both have large Republican majorities. And a lot of the members of those majorities are not going to be eager to pursue something that – takes away the use of market forces in setting electricity prices. It's going to be a hard sell.
And then
we have to remember still, I mean, we have to reiterate this. The transmission side of the business and the distribution side, which gets the electrons to your house or to your factory or your office, they have been regulated. They remain regulated. This is all about
generation.
And this notion that it's being hinted at that Ohio should be self-sufficient in terms of our own generation. Well, we aren't now. We are the fourth largest producer. Let's see if I get this right. I think we're the fifth largest producer of electricity, the fourth largest user. So we import electrons as it stands. And being part of this 13-state grid gives us reliability, and the competition has actually lowered our rates. So the companies want to go into the legislature and ask the legislators to vote for higher rates for their constituents. That will only work if they make the subject so freaking confusing that no one understands.
Well, it already is confusing. And one of the issues has to be that much of the Ohio General Assembly that was around back in 1998 and 1999 when they were getting their tutorials onto this, mm-hmm. they're gone.
They are,
or they've come back.
Most of them are gone. A few of them are left. And then there was a big energy bill in 2008. So there's a fair number of people left over from that.
Right.
It would be the education process would be substantial and would require a lot of time. And I mean,
we right now are seeing the cost we're paying for term limits. We've given the legislature a lobotomy, and now we're paying for it because the institutional knowledge isn't there.
Well, let's take a call real quick. David in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hello, Ann. I'm a senior citizen. I'm on fixed income. I'm a homeowner. Through the Home Energy Assistance Program, I receive PIP Plus assistance, without which I could not afford to remain in my home. Now, I have a really naive question. Why are utilities, gas and electric, particularly electric, why are these not a public monopoly?
They are a public monopoly.
Yeah, the distribution side.
You mean it's a publicly owned monopoly?
Publicly owned monopoly.
Yeah, right, David.
Yes, that's what I mean. Publicly owned monopoly.
Yeah. This kind of goes back to the history of regulation. There was a time a long time ago where these became shareholder owned entities, but the presence of regulation, the presence of natural monopolies over the delivery systems means that you have regulators, and regulators are supposed to hold the companies accountable.
And in Ohio, there actually is a large network of publicly owned power companies. They're the municipals, and there's also the rural co-ops.
Mm-hmm.
They work underneath Buckeye Power. Buckeye Power was a signatory to the AEP case, meant they endorsed it. I can't remember if there's – I don't think they were signatory to the First Energy case. The reason why they're signatories is that they are part owners of the same coal plants that AEP is part owners in. So even though they are a local monopoly, you can't produce enough power in your backyard. And so you buy parts of very big tea kettles.
Mm-hmm.
So the rural co-ops And some of the municipal plants are in the same trouble. In fact, there's a large lawsuit about some municipal power companies trying to back out of a large coal fire plant. I've forgotten where that's located. I think Indiana?
Illinois. Yep.
Illinois.
Yeah.
Because it's upping rates. The power generating market has been fundamentally disrupted by two things: energy efficiency, which is the cheapest way to make power, and by natural gas. And those that own the old technologies, the same way in which the telephone companies were disrupted, are trying to find their way in this brutal, in what's now turned for them a very brutal market.
Okay, David, thanks a lot for that question. If anyone else out there has a question, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Ruth. How much of this federal ruling has to do with the use of coal in energy production? In and of itself, is that what this is about?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a waiver, though, that has been referred to. What was that federal waiver? Was it back in 2003, I want to say? There was some waiver that they've hearkened back to that, well, they gave us a waiver for that. This won't be a problem.
Well, it had to do with affiliate transactions. Is that something you could speak to, Ned?
Right.
So basically
we're pointing at each other on this one.
When an affiliate transaction, so when a regulated company has an unregulated company that it owns, and any transactions you do between those two are subject to federal oversight to make sure that you're not basically self-dealing.
They're arm's length.
That you're not shifting costs.
So this was allowing this waiver, which was allowing those affiliate transactions to take place. And the actual mechanics of how it all worked is probably far beyond what the bottom line is. This deal was rescinded. You can't do it. But the underlying kind of mechanics are almost beside the point.
The only thing it was essentially a legal or accounting gimmick to allow the subsidy to go to the power plants. So that's the reason why the power was, in accounting terms, sold to the distribution companies, who then sold it into the open market. And if that sale caused a loss, then all ratepayers in the footprint, not just those using the power from the utility, mm-hmm. had to contribute to shore up and pay for the loss. So that was the legal fiction to say, oh, no, our affiliate companies aren't directly buying the power. They washed it through the market. And what FERC said was that accounting fiction doesn't pass the sniff test.
You know, to go back to David's question about why things aren't publicly owned, and you answered it, of course, there are publicly owned ones. There's the rural cooperatives, municipals, that kind of a thing. But if the Ohio General Assembly isn't eager to go in and regulate again or undo deregulation because of philosophical reasons, this Republican-controlled Ohio General Assembly is not even – would never even a million years consider a publicly owned monopoly.
Well, that's the reason why they shouldn't, because the political pressure not to close down an existing facility is enormous. So if you said, gee, our coal plants aren't competitive, they have to be shut down, that in a public setting, very this, like the reason why we had that in Central Ohio, you had this unending stupid subsidy for Ormet, which was an aluminum company smelter.
Oh, right.
That got, you know, what was it, $3 a month from every household for something that should have been shut down because it made no economic sense. And what happens is you don't see the jobs you don't get because you're killing investment in new plants. So what happens is if we keep the old inefficient tea kettles going, means the new more efficient tea kettles won't be built in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And remember, we import that power. So if those tea kettles are built in Pennsylvania, we lose twice.
We don't have the jobs and
we don't have the jobs,
the revenue, that kind of a thing.
And our production facilities are less efficient, which actually drives them deeper in the hole. So you need the market to make certain that we have the most efficient generating capacity that is possible over this 13-state grid. And if we say Ohio says we want out, we want to be it's called autarky. We want to be completely sufficient. It means we'll keep all those old plants going and we'll have much higher rates. And at the end of the day, what happens? Not only do you lose the jobs from not constructing the new plants, but the manufacturing and logistics base their energy costs go up compared to Indiana or go up compared to
and
Illinois.
And so then companies aren't going to want to move to Ohio. They're going to want to move somewhere else.
Worse. Well, they won't invest.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
that kind of series of events that Ned so skillfully just laid out is very much kind of one side in the debate. What the utilities would say is that we're living in this strange time where the electricity market has been distorted by some elements of the way that the market's constructed and because of this flood of natural gas. Mm-hmm. And because of this distortion, you're going to see perfectly good plants that are going to – may need to be shut down and that if they can just survive a couple more years into this period where these current market forces are not, you know, just where things change, where we're out of this incredibly low price environment. It ultimately comes down to two very different points of view about whether or not this current market's working or not.
Well, it's a point of view as to whether the current state of prices for fuel will remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
And as I look at it, I am an economist, but that could be debated, I guess. The long-term market that we're already seeing from futures contracts for natural gas does not show – it shows an upward movement but not a large one. That's very important. And the other is the coming regulation for coal. There's a political debate whether we're going to how we're going to regulate coal or not. But a couple things are going to happen. The Bureau of Land Management is upping its price for mining coal in the West. Dealing with CO2,
mm-hmm.
natural gas does make CO2, but it's 50% of the coal rate. So that means there are going to be other challenges. And the agreements that were filed had large disincentives for energy efficiency, which is the cheapest way to get to meet CO2 targets. So this is the first time in global history where the growth in gross domestic product, the total value of what we make, is now decoupled from energy usage. This is new.
Hmm.
And so because energy efficiency is working to the point that we can produce value-added GDP without using a proportionate amount of electricity. That's pretty exciting.
Tim in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Yes, thanks for your time. I know your time is short. I guess my question or comment would be, I mean, I've listened to a fair amount of this segment,
mm-hmm.
and to my mind, what the power companies are asking for is a subsidy.
Right.
I mean, that can be painted however you want that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess my question is, if there was a wind power company or a solar power company that would be asking for the same thing, I'm guessing that would really fall on deaf ears. And I guess to my mind, what this is one of the hidden subsidies that isn't discussed in terms of making power, you know, putting power on an equal footing, regardless of the source.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an interesting thought. I mean, obviously, requirements, green requirements have been frozen. Where's that stand right now, Dan Guarino? They were looking at extending the freeze.
Yeah, there's a proposal. So there's a 2-year freeze on Ohio's standards for energy efficiency and renewable energy. There's a proposal to extend the 2-year freeze by another 3 years. It's not clear whether or not that has any traction at this point. And talking about subsidies for, I mean, wind energy gets a lot of subsidies from various places. So it's, as does solar
federal
energy. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's, there's enough subsidies to go around for just about everybody.
Right. But we need to maintain the ability to engage in industrial scale proof of concepts for different types of generation. Because these technologies are evolving very rapidly, and you can't take something directly from the lab and take it to industry scale right away. So the wind farms that are going on in Lake Erie, I was not a fan of those.
Mm-hmm.
But the efficiency of the generation is improved so much that the bump in prices is so high. So it's worth an experiment. A lot of the solar that's going on, we've seen the price of solar with the subsidies come down to coal fire prices.
Right.
So, but the prices are continuing to drop. So if you don't have proof of concept and you don't allow for that proof of concept, we won't get the technologies right. So I'm not a big fan of across the board unlimited subsidies, but we have to be able to experiment with new technologies.
Ned Hill, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Ann. It's been a pleasure.
Ned Hill, he's a professor of public affairs and city and regional planning at the John Glenn School of Public Affairs at Ohio State University. Also, Dan Guarino, business and energy reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Dan, thanks as always for joining us.
Yep. Thank you, Ann.
Thanks to everybody for listening today, too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.